for those who didn't know him, myself included, can you give us a little background? Tell us a little bit about who David was.
Well, David was a spectacular student in high school. He was a straight A student. He gave the graduation speech for his, you know, high school graduation. He was an athlete on both football. Excuse me. He was an athlete on both baseball and basketball teams that won championship league championships during his time of playing. He was a very educated man. He went to a one-year college in California, and then he transferred to an international university in Germany. Later returned to Chico, his hometown, and got a bachelor's degree and was graduated magna cum laude, which is like the 2%, top 2% of the class. Went on to do graduate work in Germany and Russia. He got his master's degree in international studies and then went on to become a Fulbright scholar, meaning he was hired by the State Department to be a representative of the U.S. government. And he was after he got his postgraduate degrees, he was a Fulbright scholar in Belarus. Basically, he represented the United States Embassy there. He gave lectures to a university in Russian language. He was fluent in German, French, and Russian languages, so he was able to use that to his advantage as he continued to travel, you know, throughout the world. He played baseball in high school and college, and actually was a semi-pro baseball player in Germany for about 6 years. The team made spectacular advances when he was on the team. And that was his real introduction to the languages in Germany, because he basically played on a team of German locals, and he learned more of the German language practically through his time playing with the baseball team and being involved in the international university in Germany.
That's really impressive.
Yeah, he was a very outgoing, personable guy, but he was also very smart and very proactive in pursuing his goals of learning about people throughout the world. His greatest passion was travel, and the interesting thing was he eventually traveled around the world a total of 3 times, visited 77 countries, and people always ask me, well, how much did it cost you for him to do all this traveling? And quite honestly, I didn't contribute anything toward his travel. He was totally self-motivated, self-sufficient. He learned from a high school friend how to use Capital One airline miles to finance his trips around the world. What happened was he did a YouTube video that explained how to use the 2 different Capital One Freedom cards, which, you know, allow you to get 40,000 miles when you sign up for it. But every time somebody looked at his video and applied for the card, he got credited for 10,000 miles on his Capital One card. So he basically financed his travel around the world by accumulating all these miles he got through his video. He had over 400,000 views on YouTube. And so, every time somebody actually clicked on the card, he got another 10,000 miles. So that handled all of his traveling expenses. He had to pay like a 5% fee on processing and whatnot. And then in his travels, he actually got involved in an international couch surfing organization where he would look at a country he's traveling to and see if there are available families. And in doing so, he was able to stay within locals in the majority of the countries he went to. They welcomed him into their home, and they provided him, you know, a room and board. Plus, they gave him, you know, local tours, and he just really was enmeshed with that part of the culture that he was visiting. So not only did he travel basically for free, but he also was able to use the couch surfing organization to cover a lot of his room and board. Otherwise, he stayed in hostels, and, you know, there were times where he'd show up in a country and not even know where he was going to stay that night. And he would just, you know, cruise around to local hostels and find one he liked, and then he'd settle in, and then once again, he's enmeshed in the local culture. One of his major premises was that basically mankind are similar no matter what culture they're in, where they're born, what nationality. And he derived this from some, you know, when he went to a country, he tried to immerse himself within the culture. I mean, when he traveled, when he was just out of college, his bachelor's degree, he took it upon himself to travel across the Siberian Railway for basically about a month, and didn't even know the Russian language. He just, you know, settled in and through his own personality got, you know, comfortable with the people. He always rode third class coach on the Siberian Railway so he could, you know, be with the locals. from that, he spent time on the Amazon River with an indigenous host family. He came to the realization that we as humans are one of a similar kind, no matter the religion, country, or culture we are raised in. There was just an unbelievable amount of stories that he shared with me and in his book about some just mind-boggling coincidences that happened throughout his travels. Going back to that journey across the Siberian Railway, he eventually ended up at an island with about eight other international travelers who had also, you know, crossed the country without knowing the Russian language. So they immediately bonded in this island that they were staying on. And he hooked up with a guy from Ireland named Joe. And Joe and he continued from there on the Chinese railway over to Mongolia. There was another traveler there, a mysterious Spanish woman who was going to join them. But at the last minute, she didn't show up. And they just figured, well, she got changed her mind, whatever. So David and Joe went to Mongolia. They stayed in a yurt with some Mongolian cowboys. And then eventually they traveled into Beijing. And this is like 2.5 weeks later, 1,500 miles later, and they're just happened to be the national holiday for China. And so they're out on the streets of Beijing celebrating. There's 10 million people in the country. And lo and behold, in the dark streets, this woman that was supposed to join them in Mongolia shows up. And, you know, what are the odds of 10 million people 1,500 miles away, three countries later, they run into this same mysterious woman randomly on the streets in the middle of the night? Another example, which is directly opposite of the Chinese experience, is that after he moved to Haines, he was up in the just out of Haines Junction, hiking one of the trails up there, and he passed a couple, and he kind of, you know, said hi and kept going, and they hollered David, and he turned around, and this was a couple from the Czech Republic he had met in 2016 in New Zealand when he was visiting a friend of his who was also from the Czech Republic there, and these people were completing a three-year trip around the world, and they just happened to be on this trail that David was on in the Yukon Territory. I mean, from one out of 10 million in one country to being the only two people or three people on this trail at the time, it's just, you know, there's numerous examples of this in his traveling experience where you just cannot believe in the entire world that he would hook up with the same people so randomly throughout his travels. It was just really, really amazing.
Yeah, that sounds not almost impossible, mostly improbable, an incredible turn of events. But before we get to the more about the book, can you tell me a little bit about why he decided to come to Haines, of all places?
Yeah, it's an interesting story. He had completed his travels around the world. He was tired of traveling. He returned to his hometown in Chico and realized that he'd never been to Alaska. And he had a cousin up there, Cambria Goodwin, who was the owner of the Pilot Light. And he said, hey, I've never been to Haines. Mind if I come up and visit you, say, for a weekend? And she goes, oh, my gosh, the weekend he'd chosen was the weekend of the Southeast Alaska State Fair. So he came up to visit Cambria and just had a wonderful time. He said within, you know, half an hour of arriving, he was on her with her dad, his uncle, selling cheese curds at the fair in her cheese curds truck. So that was his first, you know, exposure to Alaska, and he immediately fell in love with the town and the environment and everything about it. And he had to return. He was there for like 4 days, just happened to be the same days that the fair was going on. And he knew when he left that there's something about Haines that he could not get out of his mind. He returned to Germany. He had just finished his travel. He had had a corporate job. He realized he was not going to stay there. He couldn't sit in an office. He'd had too much of a travel bug, and he knew that he was going to return to Haines. And eventually, the following spring, he did, and he's been there ever since.
Did he ever tell you what it really was about Alaska that just you know, made him want to come back here, made him want to stay here after traveling the world and seeing all these different things?
Oh, absolutely. He was so impressed with the people of the town. He said they're all here for the same reason. They're here because they want to be. He realized that something about that. He said something like something about the area. It draws you into your vortex and it just won't let you go. He's always been an outdoor camping kind of guy. He loved the outdoor spirit of Haines. He loved the community. You know, people said, well, we'll see how you feel after a couple winters up there. And he embraced the winter. His biggest enjoyment in the winter was he was involved in the basketball games that happened. He said, this is the highlight of Haines in the winter. We have like four men's teams and two women's teams, and out of the small town, there's so many people involved. This is what we do in the wintertime. And, you know, even when the roads were closed down, there was, you know, always going down to play basketball with the people in, from Haynes. And it was just, yeah, he was just, it was the people, the land. He said it just spoke to him in ways that he had never experienced throughout his entire life. And it, he knew it was going to be his forever home once he, you know, moved back there.
Well, let's talk about his book a little bit. 50 Countries, 50 Stories. How did you end up with his manuscript?
Well, this is probably the most amazing story of this, his entire life. He had been working on this book. He completed his last trip around the world in 2015. And basically he'd been working on writing this book for the last 5 years. And he wanted to be able to create a interactive ebook in which you could read his stories, and then he would have a video showing exactly what he just talked about. He was a tremendous filmmaker. He had done a lot of work. He filmed everything that he saw on his travels. He was continually filming everything. I mean, he literally had tens of thousands of videos and photographs to document what he was doing. And his goal was to create an interactive book where, like I say, you could read what he just talked about and hit on a URL tab, and it would show a video of what he talked about. And so his goal was to create this, and he never really got around to finishing it. So when he passed, the landslide took David and everything he owned, and it was lost at sea. And so we just assumed that his manuscript on his computer was lost at sea. And that was one of the biggest disappointments when I realized that he was never going to be able to finish this book. But as luck would have it, he had just purchased a brand new Mac Pro to do some, you know, final editing on his video work. And he had it about, you know, less than a week, and he slipped on the stairs and dropped it and cracked the screen. So he sent it in for repairs. This was like, you know, a week or two before he passed. And when the tragedy occurred, my wife, Michelle, and I came up to Haynes, and we were with Libby Jacobson and her family. And about 3 days in, the book showed up in the mail, the repaired MacBook showed up in the mail. And we thought, oh my gosh, I wonder if his book is on this new computer of his. And Libby tried to open the book with the password, and she tried two times, couldn't figure it out. And it's like, oh my gosh, we're going to lose everything because we can't open the darn computer. And then she got a little clue. The question was, how was he able to afford the down payment when he bought this property on Beach Road? And she knew that David had spent the last year working with my dad, who was model train collector. He had over $250,000 worth of these little in-scale model trains he'd collected. He was a dealer and went to shows and whatnot, but he was getting out of it. And so David helped him sell these darn things on eBay, and he got a percentage of the sale. So he had earned like $20,000 helping Dad do his eBay stuff. And that was the down payment on his property. And so Libby used trains for the password, and lo and behold, the computer opened, and his manuscript was on the computer. So we had his rough draft. It was a very rough draft. It was 95,000 words that were just, you know, like a one-time through writing. He hadn't gone back and done any edit himself. Luckily, I hooked up with Joe Altman Moore in Haynes. He had talked to me the first summer after David passed. We had a little reunion out at the pavilion on Beach Road. And I told Joe about it, and he's a local author. And he said, well, if you need help, you know, let me know. And so I put that in the back of my mind, and you know, it took me like 6 months to even get into reading the book. You know, I went on a camping trip with my wife and spent the entire time reading the book. And at that point, I realized this is an amazing piece of work, but it's a little more than I'm going to be able to put together. So Joe jumped in. He was my chief editor and mentor, and we've navigated the editing as well as the you know, publication of the book. And I also had tremendous help from David's third grade teacher, who was his adult friend. She came in the second season we're working on this and really helped us get back on track. But between the two of them and myself, we were able to complete his book. Basically went from 95,000 words down to about 81,000. I was able to write the last chapter, which detailed his experience in Haynes and, you know, ultimately the landslide and you know, how his life was ended. But quite honestly, Brandon, I can say that this is the single most important achievement of my life, to be able to complete David's mission when it seems so improbable. And like I said, his goal was to have an interactive ebook, which obviously I was not able to do, but we created an ebook. And the other miracle was that everything that he had ever filmed on these trips, he had backed up on four separate hard drives that he stored with his friend in Germany, Stefan. And so Stefan discovered those. He sent them to me, and I spent the better part of 2 months going through these hard drives. There were literally tens of thousands of videos and pictures. And what I ended up doing was I would read the text, the finished manuscript. When I found something interesting, I'd go back and look through these hard drives. Fortunately, they were labeled somewhat with countries per chapter, what have you. And I would find the actual image of what he had just talked about. And so in doing so, I was able to insert over 265 photos throughout the book, which basically gives you a visual of his narrative. And I think that was the what makes this book so unusual, other than the fact he's got just unbelievable stories, 50 different countries, 50 different stories. And they're just, it's hard to believe. He was a really good storyteller and writer. And so you can almost visualize what he's talking about. And then to be able to look on the next page and there's a picture of what he just spoke really makes this book a pretty remarkable, unusual type of manuscript.
I would say so. That would have incredible turn of fate that would allow that to come into your hands. So this has just recently come out, correct? This came out March, is it 7th? Is that correct?
Yes, it launched on March 7th. And that was another great turn of events. You know, Joe and I had finished the manuscript in early December, and I made the announcement to, you know, all the David fans through his David F. Haynes Facebook page that we finished the manuscript and I'm going to start working on the photos. And at that point, I realized, well, the only thing between us getting this done and not is that I need to go through all these photos. That's when I said I spent like 9 weeks going through all the photos. And then it's like when Joe saw that I posted, well, we're trying to get to the sun by David's birthday, April 9th, Joe wrote me and said, that's a little optimistic, Randy, because we were going to try to format the book ourselves and do the layout and everything. And I was able to reach out to a company that offered to do the book covers as well as the formatting for the ebook and the hard copy. And amazingly so, this company got this done in less than 2 weeks. So from the time I sent them the manuscript with the photos inserted, they formatted the ebook, the hard copy, and they were the most responsive company you could ever believe. I mean, I was on the email with them sometimes 10, 12, 15 times a day, and they were giving me exact answers to my questions, and they just, you know, directed me in the proper decision-making steps to put this thing together. And they did a spectacular job. And so, like you mentioned, we were able to have this go live on Amazon. It's offered through Amazon.com. The same page will show you the option to either get the hard copy or the ebook. And you just order it up like anything else, and it's on the way. It's pretty amazing. It really is.
I know we're still dealing with the repercussions of the landslide. The scar on the hill is still there. With this project, 50 Countries, 50 Stories, A Journey of Discovery Around the World, what kind of message do you think David would want to impart with this project?
Well, it's pretty straightforward. David had achieved such a level of understanding for the people he stayed with. And, you know, his whole premise was that we as humans are one of a similar kind, no matter the religion, country, or culture we were raised in. He was the most compassionate, accepting, respectful person I have ever known. He had respect and compassion for everybody in his life, and he was really fortunate to be able to receive such generosity and kindness as he traveled around the world with these, you know, multiple types of environments and people and cultures. He was able to get a positive experience, and that came directly from his just optimistic attitude and love for people and acceptance. And fortunately, he was able to hook up with like-minded people in the most unusual, bizarre, different places you'd ever imagine. And you know, there's so much danger and intrigue, and the book itself is just a real pleasure to read. And you know, he was able to reconfirm his feelings about mankind numerous times as he got such wonderful support. And his goal was to pay it forward and encourage people to travel and to visit other countries and to have an open mind and the understanding that basically mankind is a very positive experience for him.
All right. Well, before I let you go, is there anything you would like to add, anything you think people need to know that maybe I didn't cover?
I think we've pretty much covered. I hope we've covered what will give David the proper representation of who he was as a man. He was He was my best friend, and he was a tremendous, tremendous individual. I take a lot of pride in him. I take, you know, some responsibility for him turning out the way that he did. But I can tell you one thing, he's a better man than I will ever be, just by who he was.
I can understand that. I really appreciate you taking the time. I'm going to do my best to make sure that this news story is done right. Thank you very much for taking your time. I know this wasn't easy.
I really appreciate that you are taking the time to focus on David and his legacy and help spread his view of mankind. And you know, I think it'll be a real pleasure for anyone that has the opportunity to learn about David through his travels and learn more about his personality. And you know, just what a great guy he really was. And I have the utmost pride and joy in him being my son. And I'm glad that I was able to complete his mission in face of the improbable circumstances. It's like I mentioned earlier, it's probably the most important thing I ever accomplished, because I was able to take some random rough draft and with the help of others create what I believe is a really, really spectacular vision from my son.